Welcome to episode 30 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Series 7B is right around the corner, and we're leading into it with our commentary on the snowmen. But first, your hosts. I'm Jay Witten.
We need somebody who is more intense.
And with me are Melissa Mazza.
Perfect Hoogan name.
And Keir Hansen.
I'm holding up for catfights.
Spoilers.
We will be discussing news and rumors, as well as episodes that have already aired. But if we get into anything too serious, don't worry. We'll warn you again. Welcome to episode 30 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where we ruin the greatest Christmas special by talking over it for your entertainment purposes. I'm Jay, as always, and with me tonight are Keir. How's it going, Keir?
Good evening, sir.
And Melissa, how are you doing?
I'm great. Thank you for having me again. You guys have been actually together in person recently, haven't you?
We were spending our precious together time, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and now we're going through that recovery of going from being surrounded by, you know, 40 to 50 like-minded folk, being not only allowed but encouraged to completely geek out, to being back the house with people who do or do not get all of your references on a regular basis.
Yeah, it's rough.
But did get, as I was mentioning before we started recording, got some time to spend with a lot of Whovians, both classic and new Whovians. So for those of you who have picked up on the cast for this week, welcome again. The Drew and Drew contingency, TARDIS Mini, and a bunch of others who wanted to know what we've been talking about for a few weeks. So hopefully we'll get your involvement and get your feedback on things as we go forward.
Absolutely. Welcome to the party.
Yeah.
Well, we've got a lot of news to get through tonight, so let's go ahead and jump right into all this stuff.
Please do. For those of you who try to maintain, well, we've got things in a number of categories here. Obviously, most of the discussion right now is going to be split right between the as we've been talking about for weeks, the 50th buildup, and obviously the return to the second half of Series 7. Which do we want to jump on first? Because we got a lot.
We do have an interview with Stephen Moffat. He's talking about everything that's coming up in Series 7B and Series 8 and things like that. Pull the page up here. He was asked about River Song, and we talked about this news last week in that River is going to be coming back for the end of this series, and she is going to be in Series 8, is what he was saying.
The way he was going about trying to explain her involvement was what we, you know, what I was really trying to take away from this, wanting to know whether it was going to be more of those little interspersed moments where their paths crossed, you know, as they were, you know, as we've seen them in the past, kind of jumping through the journal saying, oh, have we been here yet? Have we been here yet? Have we been here yet? And that was always kind of interesting to say, all right, well, they're giving themselves the opportunity to go back and revisit these anytime they want in a nice little encapsulated fashion. Or are they going to be, you know, prepping themselves for something much bigger? And we can look forward to that. So what did he say?
Well, he didn't really say anything as
of course he didn't.
Of course not. Go figure. He can sit there and talk for a good hour and a half and give you absolutely no information.
Nothing like a good batch of disinformation.
He did say that the Battle of Trenzalore and, you know, the Doctor's future that led to all the attempts on his life and everything is going to be coming up. He didn't say when. He didn't say how long we'd have to wait. He just acknowledged the fact that, yes, I have remembered that I put that stuff in there. It's not going to go away. You know, unlike the exploding TARDIS, which never got explained. So,
yeah. And I'm okay with that degree of ambiguity, personally, just because at this point, you know, we in particular as podcasters on a topic really love to dissect the hell out of these things, and a lot of times we end up building our expectations to a certain point where anything other than what we really had our hearts set on kind of feels like a downer to a certain degree, no matter how good what we received may have been. It wasn't what we wanted. So at this point, I'm almost resigned to say, you know what, if you just tell me enough to know that she's going to be involved, you know, and she's such a valued character in a lot of our opinions, I'm okay with that much for right. now.
Yeah.
You know, I'll get retentive about it later and try to dissect the hell out of it as we always do. But for right now, just knowing that Alex Kingston is going to be involved makes me happy, and I can ride that out for the remainder of the season.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about River Song till we've been blue in the face, but what do you guys think about what he said about Trenzalore and how they're going to bring that up? Because personally, I'm kind of torn because I think that, yeah, they have to address it. Like, I don't like that it was brought up and then never brought back again, so I'm glad that they're going to be addressing it. But at the same time, I'm kind of over it. Now I'm into, you know, what's the whole Clara storyline, and I'm, you know, obviously they're going to intersect somehow, so...
There was another article that was floating around just within the last couple of days that said, I forget who they were attributing the little soundbite or the quote to, saying that that Clara is the only mystery worth solving.
That's actually in one of the new trailer for Series 7B. It's actually the Doctor who says that. He's talking to Clara and says, "You are the only mystery worth solving."
Okay. All right.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's going to take up the bulk of Series 7B, I think. If not, I'm hoping that they don't try and wrap it all up in Bells of St. John. I'm hoping that they do kind of try and stretch it out a little bit, give us a little bit more suspense, but, you know, I don't know. But the fact that he's saying that the Battle of Trenzalore and everything is coming up, I'm glad to know that he hasn't forgotten about it. That was my only thing. I want him to take all this stuff that we've been complaining about not finding anything out about, and put it all in one nice package in like the 50th anniversary special or something. Be like, yeah, the exploding TARDIS and the Battle of Trenzalore and all this stuff that you thought I'd forgotten about. Yeah, here's the explanation.
Okay. Didn't they stop this exploding TARDIS? I thought it was just kind of retconned, like it, you know, just never happened because it never happened.
It kind of did, but somebody had said something at one point about, you know, what caused it, and yes, they stopped it from happening, but he was never able to figure out why it happened in the first place.
Yeah, it wasn't a matter of causing a different path to the occurrence of events. It wasn't a causality shift. So it wasn't a matter of, you know, it didn't happen because it wasn't given the opportunity to happen. This was a matter of there was something else going on that was never given its just explanation.
Gotcha.
So we'll see what happens. I trust him for now.
Well, we always do until we get angry with him.
Yeah, exactly. Which always happens.
Yeah. Tends to be. Well, that's the risk that he runs as, you know, as the creative source behind this, you know, or as we lovingly now always refer to them as showrunners. But, this is actually, you know, because we got Steemo up in conversation here, and I was mentioning some of the conversations we had over the past weekend, a lot of people were starting to discuss, or starting to ask for, our opinions about whether or not we are starting to see and we actually kind of touched on this a little bit last week. Steemo giving himself the opportunity to sort of pave the way to step out of the showrunner's position over the next couple of seasons, and whether he may be either preparing other members of his production crew or writing himself a sort of a button potentially at the end of our time with Smith. Sort of in the same way that Davies ended things on at the close of the Tennant years, and do the same sort of step out. Because I'm still under the impression, and this, well, I don't know, say impression, my prediction is that we'll see Matt Smith through the close of Series 8, and then we'll have another Doctor into Series 9. That's just I got a hunch, and now I'm kind of wondering if I'm staying true to that, is that also going to mean that Moffat decides that that's his best opportunity, or whenever Smith's run comes to
end. I don't think it necessarily has to do with whether it's, you know, season 8, season 9, whatever. It's just Moffat and Matt Smith will end at the same time.
Yeah.
But, I mean, we've talked about this before, though. Is there any new information out there? Like, has he said anything about when he's going? Like,
Not necessarily. I think this is really just a matter of, because we've seen, obviously, we had her change last week with executive producers going forward, and there's a little bit of a shift around in the BBC in that regard. The way that he's sort of playing around with what he's doing with the Doctor, and how he's handled the latest companion change, and introducing a companion that's got more complexity than just any other. This is not a typical human companion. There's something more going on here, which is going to add a complexity level to it that would allow a nice, unlike what he was given, where he had to take on a new regeneration, a new TARDIS, a new companion, a new scenario, and work an entire arc from there. He's giving himself the opportunity to cultivate a complex, potentially, you know, and granted, I'm taking this, you know, a huge predictive element here, a potentially very complex companion character, and be able to use that as the bridge into a new Doctor later on. So, I don't know. It's a lot of speculation, but I just wanted to kind of throw that out there because I like it when people start to ponder these things and take them apart and come up with things that I hadn't thought of. So, just muddying the waters. That's all.
All right. Well, we also have a news article about Jenna Louise Coleman showing up at the Game of Thrones premiere.
Yeah, I found this on Daily Mail, so take it for, you know, what it is, which is Daily Mail. Because, I mean, I see a lot of they've been covering Game of Thrones a lot, which clearly means that they're being paid for it. And they, you know, and I'll go on record saying that. If you're going to sue someone, sue me, because they're being paid to put this shit out there. But anyway, apparently Jenna Louise Coleman is dating someone from Game of Thrones, and she was at the premiere, and he was saying that he was more excited about her getting the role in Doctor Who than she was, which I find amazing. I've said before, I watch too much TV, and I love Game of Thrones, so she's dating Richard something, who plays Robb Stark.
Ah, okay. Okay. Yeah, I didn't know what her connection was with that whole thing. Interesting.
She looks very cute, though. A little black dress and a belt. Okay.
Okay.
Game of Thrones premiere, yes.
This has been the Melissa Fashion Hour.
Yes. So.
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting. It's going to be kind of fun for a little while to watch these run in tandem, because obviously, you know, we've got our return next week for series 7, you know, picking up on episode 7, and at the same the next night we've got Game of Thrones returning as well. So busy weekend there.
Yeah, and I can't believe that you said next week. That it's so close.
Yeah, I keep catching myself on that too. Really, Kier? Yeah, next week for series.
Yeah. Well, we've also got some a few new posters. The episode posters that they've been doing. Yeah, it starts off with the bells of St. John, and then the rings of Akhaten, or I am continually getting caught up on that. Anyway, and then Cold War, and then Hyde, which looks like this is going to be the ghost story one.
I wonder, because it was called Phantom of the Hex or something like that. I think maybe this is the same episode. They changed it to Hyde, maybe. I'm not sure.
Yeah. I don't know. All I know is that it looks all kinds of creepy, but Jenna Louise Coleman looks ridiculously hot.
Right. Yeah, no, actually, so speaking of, have you guys seen the pictures? So we have these posters of all the episodes, but the Bells of St. John, the first one, there's been like a bunch of publicity stills released. You guys want to talk about them? I think, again, back to the Melissa Fashion Hour, her hair looks great, Jenna Louise Coleman.
Yes, yes, yes. Her hair looks fantastic. She's just as cute as a button in all these. No, I mean, in terms of what we're getting away from this, I typically, when we start to get this close to the airing of episodes, I actually step back from the really, really intense analysis, because I'm ready to be entertained. I've spent months prior wondering about location, timeline, introduction of new characters, recurrence of characters, new villains, and so forth. And then when I get within about the 2-week window, I've had all of this built up, and I'm ready to just sit back and watch. And if you remember what we were taking apart last week or last time around, when we had the guy who had analyzed the hell out of one of the promo posters with all the shattered glass and the reflections right. and all the glass, that was about the point where I hit my saturation. And I said, okay, now I'm at the point where I'm staring with a magnifying glass at little components on a promo poster. I'm losing the forest for the trees at this point, and I'm going to step back. So I love the fact that they are going so art intensive on these, because it really is a nice credit to what events this show has become for all of us. And even the incidental fans see these things and see the way that BBC and BBC America are going about on the social medium or social media, putting these things out there, changing cover photos and releasing these things very systematically, and they get more and more intense and more beautiful. Really, I mean, these are gorgeous posters.
Oh, yeah. These are really good.
But it's a nice testament to what an event this has become. Like the one for the two episodes in, when we see the Rings of Akaten, it looks like, and maybe this is because of the fact that it has this kind of a, I don't know where they picked up on this. It looks a bit like an Indiana Jones or a Romancing the Stone.
Yeah, that's exactly kind of what I was thinking.
They're going for that 100%. The color scheme, especially, this is the Indiana Jones poster, just redone.
Yeah. And the Cold War has a very kind of an old school Kremlin Hunt for Red October, except for Matt Smith's goofy expression. He can't help that. Hyde is the one that intrigues me personally, just in terms of the way they chose to go about the artistic scope on this one. Now matching the candelabra to the screwdriver.
He looks like he's trying to be so serious with that screwdriver. It's a cute poster.
But that kind of reminds me a little bit of The Others and some of those classic kind of creeper films. So nicely done all around, I think. I'm glad that no one has noticed the fact that in all the little mosaic inlays across that one, there are the faint images of certain things on those pictures.
Yeah, I was actually just noticing that right before you said that, and I'm like, "Ooh, I want to look and see what that." No, you don't.
I'm gonna
let it go.
Exactly. Maybe the week before the episode airs, but we'll take one at a time here.
One thing I wanted to go not too terribly in depth about, but in the in the pictures for the Bells of St. John, we've got one picture that just automatically struck me right off the bat. Like, you've got the doctor leaning over, holding what appears to be yet another Clara's dead body.
Mm. Yeah.
It was like, really? They're going to kill her again? They're really going this route? And then you go to the very next one, and it shows her laying on the ground, apparently unconscious, and like some kind of computer code overlaid it. So right. We already know the premise of this episode is there's something living in the Wi-Fi feeding off people. Mm-hmm. And then you get a picture like this, and I'm like, the whole, like, she downloaded herself into something, and yeah, that whole theory is starting to look a lot more likely with these couple pictures.
I don't know, you're making a big assumption that is a corpse that you're looking at in the previous photo, though.
Okay, well, it's Clara unconscious. What do we have to go on other...
Yeah, but she dies every time we see her anyway. So
exactly.
She's not quantifiable.
She's not going the Sean Bean on us here. I'm going to take the devil's advocate route on that and say that she got either overloaded or brain fried a little bit, passed herself out. And the code overlay that you're seeing right there, which isn't really code. I mean, looking at that, that's complete gobbledygook as far as that screen cap is concerned. But could be, I don't know, could be any number of things. It could just be someone trying to do some sort of a scan on her. So I don't know. I'm not going with the Clara dies every episode, though, because that's going to get real old real quick.
It is going to get real old, but I agree that it's going to happen.
See, that's the new theory, is that she's actually like an earlier incarnation of River Song, because what other person could die that many times other than Rory's daughter?
that would actually—I would like that.
I wouldn't actually like that. It just struck me as funny. Please, for love of God, stay away from that.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be surprised if that's what they went with, but I would still like it.
Yeah, well, or you're looking at the latest iteration of a, or the latest potential variant on the survival of the last remaining Time Lady.
Yeah, maybe she's a Time Lady. I mean, River Song technically is a Time Lady, or half of it, you know?
Well, yeah, in so far as that she is of some... that she bears a Gallifreyan regeneration ability, but she's not Gallifreyan.
Correct.
You know, she's entirely human, but because of the fact that she has some of that gift of the TARDIS, so to speak, within her.
A time head.
Yeah. I don't know. So she's something in between. But we don't know about Clara.
All right, new theory. Clara is the master.
Oh, God.
Nice.
You heard it here first.
Oh, Jesus.
All right. Just remember, that's Melissa at GallifreyPublicRadio.com.
Send your hate mail, too.
So are we ready to do this?
Yeah. Yeah, I actually, I will be the first one to admit that when we first went through this and we first watched, I have watched this exactly once. Just once.
Nice.
So I'm willing to run through this whole damn thing again.
Awesome. All right. So we're going to go ahead and start from the zero mark, assuming you're watching a digital version.
Yeah, I downloaded Snowflakes. I have this saved from Christmas time, and I said, you know what? I'm gonna buy it from iTunes. I'm gonna splurge the $2.99 and not fast forward through commercials.
Well, we appreciate that.
Yeah.
All right. So we will go ahead and start in 3, 2, 1, go. Creepy snowflakes.
Aren't they all really?
I don't know. I've never really thought to examine them that way. That is like a ridiculously huge yard for four kids.
True. And a ridiculously good snowman for that amount of snow.
Mm.
Yeah, there's no like tracks or anything from where he was rolling it up. It just
dropped from the sky.
Pretty much, yeah.
I had to fight the urge today as I was shoveling yet more snow. To build the snow Dalek that I hadn't had a chance to build yet this year.
Oh, nice.
Why fight that urge?
Well, you know, at that point it was like 6:30. I put in a full work day. I'm like standing there in the driveway, my work clothes still shoveling. Like, you know, the hell with it. I'm going inside.
That sucks. You guys still have snow. We got a couple inches and it left.
Yeah.
Melted away.
I promise to think of you while I'm sitting in my 80-degree weather tomorrow.
Thanks, Jay.
All right, you want to mute him on the Skype call? So yeah.
All right, so we already have Patrick Stewart talking to this kid.
Or Ian McKellen. You know, McKellen. One or the other.
Oh, sorry, you know, same thing. Magneto, Professor X, whatever.
Again, that is Melissa at GallifreyPublicRadio.com.
Oh, boy.
That was a joke. I swear, I know the difference.
Use the force, Harry.
Exactly.
Nice. Just see how many fandoms we can piss off tonight while we're watching this. Yeah.
That could have been my favorite meme of all times.
Yeah.
And he has such a Christopher Walken look about him.
He really does. That's who my wife actually thought it was at first.
That would have been an insane mashup.
I love Christopher Walken to Doctor Who.
I don't know. These snowmen, they're coming to life. Wow. They're scaring all the people.
See, like, you can tell they're really trying to make these snowmen scary, but it just does not come across.
I don't know. Their facial expressions do a nice job.
I still don't understand, though. Like, this is pretty much his projection of them. He wants the snowmen to eat these people? Like,
well, he's a very disturbed individual.
Right. Well, under instruction.
I have a problem with the fact that she walked out in the snow without even, like, putting an extra shawl on or anything.
Nah, I've done it before. You just go out there.
Yeah, she's but
already,
not...
I mean, this is Victorian England. Yeah. I mean, she's already wearing about 12 layers there. You just...
She's already slutty for showing her toes, all right? Like...
I'm glad that we get Surly Smith.
Yeah, and he was...
We needed this.
He was actually able to pull it off, too. I mean, that was the thing.
Yeah, this could be kind of hokey, but he does it.
I wish it had been longer lived. It seems like he gets over it too quickly.
Very.
I like her reactions to him, because this is the first time we're seeing her now as a new companion. Mm-hmm. It's cool that the companion meets Surly Matt Smith.
And I think it's also nice and appropriate that she's the one responsible for breaking him out of that, because that's one of the things that we get that we always want the reminder is the fact that the Doctor's relationship with humans is very symbiotic, that he gains as much from their involvement as they do from him. But as Jay just said, it's an awfully quick flip.
Really, well, I mean, we'll see that. Yeah, no, but for right now, he's still surly and mean. Right?
Yeah.
We'll see. I mean, you just set your watch by it.
Pretty much, yeah.
This is officially the episode of one-liners.
Oh. This is the silliest part, I think. Yeah. I kind of don't like this to remember this as being part of the episode.
What, her chasing down the carriage?
Yeah, and the line that she delivers upside down.
Okay, yeah, that part's kind of hokey.
Actually, I like the Doctor talking on the thing here. Alright, so here we get the intro.
Yeah, another variation to the intro. Now, the question is, will this persist, or do they just do this as a...
I think this is the new...
I don't think they're going to put this much work into redoing the entire theme without keeping it. Mm-hmm. They could be, but I hope...
It is a nice tribute, again, classic Who, to have the sort of the superimposed face of the Doctor fly past.
Yeah.
I mean, that's old school.
Yeah, and I do like the fact that most of it takes place outside of the Time Vortex graphic.
Mm-hmm.
I get so tired of that cloud tunnel.
Right. Well, it was getting to be a little much.
Yeah. Still don't like the flying in through the TARDIS door thing.
No.
Get rid of that and it'll be perfect.
And it also helps with exposition to explain this all again for the audience.
Exactly. I was just thinking about it. Does he, like, actually open his teeth at any point during this episode?
No.
I'd be interested to see what the actor, if that's his thing or the character's.
Trying to think of the things I've seen him in.
I don't. He's a character actor. He's done things, but I can't think either. All right, so here we see Vostra and Jenny again. The veiled detective and her fatuous accomplice.
I
I love the idea of, like, you know, a lizard woman lesbian in Victorian London.
And he sees that she's a lizard and still says a woman, you know, instead of like, he's a lizard. Winter is coming.
Womp womp. For the audience's sake. And things go goofy.
I don't know. I don't think they could have gotten away with Strax in a different episode, but this one just has that kind of goofy quality that you're able to pull it off.
Mm-hmm.
Automated laser monkeys.
I don't know, I like the whole rumpled look that the Doctor has in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
And it really does fit the theme of the times.
And that he feels fatigued.
Yeah.
He's at an exhaustion point with everything that he's been doing for a millennia.
Yeah. I mean, Claire is just completely okay with it, and she's just like, just like, wow, this is fascinating. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So the giant walking potato she's freaked out about, but a worm, that scares her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
I really hope we get more explanation than that.
I don't know. I think it's one of those things where they might as well just leave it be.
Yeah, maybe. I love that line.
See, he already knows about the intelligence. He tells her to stop thinking about them.
Well, to a certain degree. I mean, he's making that correlation as he works through this. But we're becoming Ray from the Ghostbusters at this point.
Yeah. Wow.
I tried not to think. How does Strax remember?
Now, I'm pretty sure there'd be a gate somewhere that he didn't have to jump over the fence.
But it's closed. Park closes after sunset.
He's so tall, he can just leap it.
Really?
If only he had some kind of device that would unlock stuff, you know, with a little green light. Just,
yeah.
Oh, well.
That's improbable.
I'm just getting nitpicky now.
I love the music here. It is very Christmassy.
Oh, yeah. They've always done a nice job. Gold has done a nice job of being able to give thematic elements to his variations on themes that we always recognize from him.
Mm-hmm.
His orchestral style can take on...
No, he's great. Yeah.
Why... This is the quietest street ever.
It's snow. It muffles sound.
No, just there is not another soul. There we go.
Yeah, but no, none of them.
Yeah, where were they from the other angle? All of a sudden, there's people in the street.
Right. Well, until later when she has to get up there and they're all congregating.
Well, it's the middle of the night.
Hmm.
I'm just going to write that one off. I'll let him have that one. I just can't get over the fact that, like, you know, none of this stuff is freezing cold. It's been snowing, but yet none of this stuff is, you know, too cold for her to touch.
She apparently doesn't feel cold at all, because she's been out and about in this stuff for hours now.
Yeah.
Without a wrap or a shawl or anything. Oh, wait, no, now she's got a shawl.
She's had it the whole time. She just now, like, thought, oh, you know what, maybe I'll put this thing on.
Higher elevations and all.
I mean, this pretty much just sums up her character right here. She's just like, well, might as well just jump off, see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, me personally, I'd be freaked out. I'm like, all right, it's holding that hand, but it's, you know, I'd be crawling out there on all fours.
I mean, once you've made your way up there, you may as well just jump.
Well, it's an interesting distinction. She's not reckless, but she's fearless.
She's inquisitive.
And doesn't really seem to recognize a lot of the risks involved with some of the things that she chases down in the interest of that curiosity.
Yeah, and spoiler alert, it gets her killed.
Shut up!
How would they kill this kind of character, though? I mean, you can't off Clara.
You can't.
Because then what are they going to do? They just introduced her.
But she leaves behind her shawl, like a glass slipper.
Cinderella.
And he sniffs it.
Yes.
pervert.
Smells like a harlot.
It's like the predecessor to the Snoopy snow cone machine.
Mm-hmm.
It's got the little shovel and everything.
Or any of those inflatable snow globes you can purchase for your front lawn.
Yeah, never let me become that person. I might try at some point, and I'm holding you two accountable.
No, I like those people.
Oh, God.
I'm no help whatsoever.
That's what you get for city living. Street corner walking.
No, her real work is a more respectable job. And yet, the thing about the difference between the accents bothers me. That's one of my number one complaints with this episode. When the kids are like, oh, you use your other accent. She says, like, three words differently. When we have heard that, you know, in these last couple scenes.
I just don't see her being able to put on those clothes in the back of a carriage. Not with everything that goes into it.
No, you're absolutely right. That's actually a thing, anthropologically speaking. When there stays in the back, it's more expensive because you need someone to do it for you instead of stays in the front, which means you're a prostitute and do it yourself.
All right.
I told you. For a day job.
So this is actually a recurring theme now, is we've got, you know, two versions of the same character. Because in Asylum of the Daleks, you had, you know, human Oswin and then Dalek Oswin. And here we've got, you know, the barmaid Clara and governess Clara.
Yes, the Mary Poppins.
Yeah, not so much.
Oh, yeah, I never thought of it that way, though, of, like, the human Dalek dichotomy and governess barmaid dichotomy.
And the oddly snow-free backyard.
Yeah, I don't see why that makes him giggle like that. Just
like, oh my god, a lower class person.
Because they don't get to fraternize with the unwashed masses.
Guess not.
I guess it's kind of the equivalent of watching reality TV now.
Yeah. Do your other voice.
Kiss your other husband. Tee-hee-hee-hee.
Now we explain the governess again.
It freaked me out, though, the first time when he says, I hated her. I started to think he killed her. I guess he didn't, the little kid.
Well, that's kind of personal. She's a young, developing woman. Things are gonna happen.
Yes.
I love that. The Doctor, Doctor Who. That's that point I like it.
Yeah, that's one of the few times where it can fit, but they're really overusing it.
Yeah.
Because it generally is kind of like thrown at him. Like, yes.
This whole scene here is just absolutely brilliant.
I love the scene. I feel it's kind of out of place with the rest of the episode, but it's my favorite scene.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit too intellectual for everything else that's going on in the episode, but yeah, it's brilliant. The way it was written is just fantastic.
Yeah.
I think Jenny's reactions are what sell it, though.
Yeah.
The fact that she's able to stand behind her and, like, you know, appreciate what she's saying.
Mm-hmm. She may very well have undergone a similar sort of an interrogation or contest or test of wills. Game of riddles, almost.
What has it got in its pockets?
A TARDIS key.
With the glasses.
Yeah. Such Amy's a nice glasses, touch. Yeah.
And the fact that they shift focus from him to the glasses just completely seals that.
Mm-hmm.
Danger, Will Robinson.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing.
I love the fact
theme on the yeah, music.
The Sherlock theme is great.
No.
And see, that's the thing that got me about the scene, was it was just, he was all like, you know, mopey and upset and everything in the TARDIS, and then all of a sudden, here he is being himself.
Back to Goofball Smith.
And I mean, it was just such a quick turnaround that it was like, really?
But was that because of the fact that he has now been given an opportunity to... what put him in this funk in the first place? The loss of the Ponds.
Right.
Yeah, this
complex, inexplicable girl that he's just run into has been given the one-word test, and what's the one word that she comes up with?
Yeah.
Is that enough to jog him like this?
Is it enough to get him interested? Yes. Is it enough to, you know, completely wipe away all his depression and everything? That's a bit of a stretch for me.
Mm. I mean, I just don't understand. Like, I can understand why it turns him into his old self again, but how do we know that that was going to be what she said? She could have said a million other words, and Pond happened to be it.
Mm-hmm.
I love his computer jokes right there. She might have said help.
It's a lot of light being thrown by that one little window.
Yeah. Yeah. I like Ghost Hand betrays him here. I was reading something online. It was a kind of wacky theory, but basically that, you know, because the Doctor lost his hand in the sword fight with the Sycorax, that hand is still still newer.
That's cute. Yes.
Because you're going to die before you get the chance.
Exactly.
This little girl's a smart ass. Kids are traumatized for life now.
Yeah. I don't know. I think this thing's kind of freaky.
It's got to be rough for the voice actress, because she's about three quarters of her dialogue was just grunting.
Yeah. And now we go full goofball. This is like one of those Dyson fans they've got now. See, blue tie, he's in the past.
Wow.
Last time, everything I see from this point on. Yeah. Go back and look at your promotional posters. Start analyzing the hell out of the color scheme.
Oh, thanks, I'm good.
I'm on it.
Had to work the line in.
Bow ties are cool.
Learn not to melt. You know, for some reason, this little exchange here reminds me of the old movie Clue from the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's just such rapid fire, and like, you know, you can't keep track.
Well, yeah, you're getting into classic British farce at this point. Lots of doors, lots of people fainting.
Lots of domestics opening doors who are relegated to a caste system. By the way, I've been looking at these posters, and he's wearing a dark blue bow tie, just like in this episode. For everything except for the hide. Or hide.
Okay.
The previous governess has a terribly lower class accent. Far worse than Clara's. You hear it?
She was just mimicking the doctor.
I love when he shows the screwdriver in Foster's face.
It's interesting all around how they deal with this particular foe. I don't know, it just... Something doesn't stick right.
This is where it starts to shine through that this is a Christmas special. They didn't, you know... They came up with a decent story... And things like that, but they didn't really pay attention to the details like they do normally.
Mm.
It's just, you know, let's have a fun episode with a good story and, you know, details be damned.
Right.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Matt Smith can't pull off badass. It just doesn't happen.
He's done angry, and I'll take that.
Yeah.
But as far as being threatening?
Not really, no. Yeah.
How about them kissing here? He's...
It bothered me. Because it led me to believe, all right, is this shades of how they're going to interact from this point on every time he gets flustered or every time she wants to try and pull her weight around?
I think it is.
I don't know. I mean, look back. I mean, how many companions have we had kiss him? You know,
all of them. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Rose, Martha, well, Donna. Granted, that one was more
using
comedic.
Using it as a manipulative tool.
Well, hell, Amy was trying to get into his pants. So,
right.
Good old Amy.
I'm hoping that it just turns into the one-off thing that it looked like.
Yeah. Her bus will get stuck.
I love this little part here because this just shows exactly how smart she is.
Mm-hmm.
Love it. On the inside.
She's seen better days.
Yeah. I love that they were finally able to do this shot. I mean, this is something they've been restricted from doing for, you know, the entire series here, but they finally were able to fly into the TARDIS.
Mm-hmm.
And the music.
Yeah. I'm sorry, for all the people that have been poo-pooing this, this thing's freaking gorgeous.
Yeah.
It's dark, it's mechanical, it's systematic, it doesn't have the same degree of goofery that started coming about. It didn't look like a steampunk toy box.
It's a throwback to Fifth Doctor, Sixth. Yeah.
Mm.
And there it is.
It's more on the outside.
I don't know. I think that everyone that's crapping on it, saying that they don't like it, it's just going to be a matter of time. Once we see it some more, once we get used to it, then people will start to like it. Mm-hmm. I think it's just the fact that it's different. Because, you know,
they have,
I mean,
faces on the monitors too.
Yeah,
I like those. I got to see some people if they've done some decent artistic recreations of those.
You know, one thing I find funny is the fact that Whovians are notoriously adverse to change, and that's just hilarious to me given the nature of the show.
Exactly. Yeah.
Good way to put that.
But there are reasons for this, and they've shared those reasons with us, and I think they're valid.
Yeah, but there hasn't been a in story reason. All we know is that the Doctor has a new, or the TARDIS has a new control room.
Well, no, according to the instructions the set designer was given when he came up with the new concept art that they built this interior on. We talked about this, didn't we?
Yeah, but what I'm saying is, like, there's no explanation in the story. Like,
they never have. They've never given an explanation for the changes to the interior of the TARDIS control rooms from regeneration to regeneration or even within.
No, but if you look at New Who, we've had two different control rooms, and we got the second one because the first one got blowed up. So,
well, but they also have that the line that explains it, that it's a new desktop theme, that it can, you know, as easily as I change my desktop... Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I think that was meant to explain it.
Yeah.
No.
I seriously did not believe this at first. I was like, there's got to be something. He's going to catch her or something. I did not expect this.
Well, they drag it out for another 20 minutes, too. Mm-hmm. So.
Exactly. She should be a lot more squishy at this point.
A little bit, yeah, but, you know, this is a family show.
It's Christmas, so
yeah, not a
much less blood.
Yeah. And she conveniently has a death meter on her.
Yeah, you'd expect some more broken bones and blood and stuff, but... Yeah.
Hardly even disturbed the snow.
Where's the impact crater, damn it? I demand some realism in my Doctor Who. I love Strax's bedside manner.
Yeah.
That's how I imagine myself as a nurse. Worry.
Just like the fact that he's able to use a touchscreen with those gigantic sausage fingers.
Yeah, seriously.
How does he know she's going to be fine? I thought it meant that because he sees her as a Dalek in the future, but he doesn't.
No, I think it's just wishful thinking.
Wishful thinking.
Yeah.
Yeah. He just lost his best friend, and the first time that he opens up to somebody, they go and die. He's not ready to accept that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, maybe not just lost, but is continually trying to recover.
That's what's affecting him most right now. Yeah.
So how many random TARDIS keys are there floating around? Because he hands them things out like candy on Halloween.
It's just a key. It's not even like a special thing. It's just a key.
But I mean, I don't think he got the one back from, from Martha. Maybe
I think they returned to him.
Maybe.
No, I think they keep it and like they have a surprise party on his birthday. Everyone comes into the TARDIS. What is he wearing, leopard? It's like pimp coat.
No, that's not pimp coat.
No, we've seen pimp coat. That's not pimp coat.
Victorian pimp coat.
Okay, maybe Victorian.
Everything you need to know about house is She says that, like, saving the world is a bad thing. Always bug me.
The risk he's taking to do so.
Phrase it differently.
Yeah, I wonder if all the damage from the TARDIS is from when they were bouncing around in Asylum of the Daleks. Because it looked all burned and scarred and stuff at the end of that. And I just wonder if he hasn't bothered to clean it up.
No.
That's a good point.
Or Angels Take Manhattan, not Asylum of the Daleks, sorry.
Yeah, and they were doing some repairs.
Yeah, like River was trying to clean it up, but got interrupted by, you know, Mommy and Daddy being killed.
Mm-hmm.
Ian McKellen, I love him.
I don't know. I think when I reach in and grab a bunch of flesh, I wouldn't think that it was ice.
I'd want to look down into the box.
Yeah.
When the intelligence was referenced in earlier episodes of the Classic Who, it wasn't like this, right? Where one person could control it? Or
no, it hadn't been broken up to this extreme. You would see evidence of the intelligence as it had made manipulations along the way, but it wasn't a direct confrontation where you'd be, you know, dealing with one mouthpiece, so to speak.
Mm.
Well, and that supposedly this is the first thing to come from the Great Intelligence. Like, this is the first time that it has encountered the Doctor.
Gotcha. Yeah. This is, yeah.
So everything else that we saw in Classic Who is supposed to come after this.
Right.
So do you guys think that this is something that we're going to see more of, or is this just Moffat being a fanboy and saying, yep, I like this one?
Personally, I think this is a one and done.
I disagree.
Okay.
But no, go on.
Well, no. All right. Take a lot of introductions of potential characters or revivals of certain villains and things along the way, and not just in Who, but in a lot of programming. You test out, you pilot out a concept, and then watch public reaction to it. And in terms of a lot of the discussion, just typical water cooler discussion, maybe not, you know, enthusiasts or people who really, really go into the intricacies of the show, but just water cooler discussion about the episode they just saw, they're not talking about the Great Intelligence. They were talking about the creepy snowman. It was an aspect of the episode that didn't quite get the same amount of after, you know, post-op discussion. So I might think that the production crew would look at that and say, well, you know, we gave it a shot. It didn't seem to capture people's attention or get them asking questions the way we thought it might. Maybe we won't use it again.
Well, I don't know.
I just think there's so much potential for them to use it for other things.
You're also looking at it from a little deeper under the surface than a lot of viewers do, though. So I don't know.
Yeah, well, I mean, it did get people talking. It did make people question what the deal was with the Great Intelligence. You know, it didn't make them question enough to actually go and learn about it. They're just like, hey, what is this stuff? So I could see it going either way.
And it didn't distract them from the what the hell is Clara question.
Yeah. Which I think that that's really what Moffat was after when he wrote this. So, I mean, it could be that this is all part of his plan.
Hmm.
Yeah, this is right up there with killing the Cybermen with love. In fact, I think that one has a little bit more credit.
What, the flooding it with emotions to take down the Cybermen has more credibility than this?
Yes, than a family crying on Christmas turns a bunch of evil snow into rain, or tears.
We've had love with defeating the Cybermen. Anything can happen on this show.
And it's Christmas. So, what's better than crying on Christmas?
Yeah. Well, that snow hasn't melted yet.
Yeah, what's up with that?
It was packed a little tighter.
Yeah, I do think that they were a little bit heavy-handed with this part here.
Well,
I understand making, you know, you want people to remember and make the connection, but I mean, yeah, the only thing you could have done to make it more clear is an actual split screen.
Well, in the trailer that we saw, she repeats this line again. This is the phrase.
Yeah, apparently. Merry Christmas. You're dead.
Or Clara.
Yes. something sticking in mind. Go back to the Pandorica and the Big Bang and the whole idea of remembering the Doctor.
Would they do that storyline again, though?
But no, the whole idea of the connection between a Time Lord and persistence through these sort of potential ending instances, you know, his disappearance into the rift or that sort of thing, or into the vortex, because of the fact that he's remembered. I got a feeling they might be playing with this again.
Well, and I mean, it could be that, you know, that Moffat is going to try and wrap it all up with the, you know, go back that far and tie this all together.
Interesting. Because, I mean, we're going back, I'm thinking, issue where the Doctor gets, he's erased by that crack.
Right.
Amy's able to bring him back by remembering him, but Amy's ability to remember him is done because of the fact that River Song knew to drop her diary off with Rory at a time when the Doctor never existed. She had the compulsion to do so because she was affected by something, by the... by that gift that she carries, you know, bestowed by the TARDIS from the, you know, from the great expanse of time, that refuses to forget, even when things are erased. There's that persistence, and it's something that's very Time Lord specific. Well, so does that lead some credence to the thought that maybe Clara has some sort of Gallifreyan origins?
Well, if you look at it, I mean, they actually go with, I mean, there's a lot of references to memory. I mean, if you look in Asylum of the Daleks, you know, when Amy asks the Doctor, you know, what do you do? And he's like, make them remember you. And then obviously the line from Oswin at the end, you know, remember, you know, they keep bringing that up. And I don't know. I don't think that's an accident. Yeah, it doesn't seem like a coincidence to me.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Something to think about. But we'll find out in about, what, a week and a half now? Whenever you're listening to this?
Let's see. Not to be too precise or anything, but as of the time of this recording, we will have our answer within 9 days and 21 hours, so...
Not to be too precise.
Well, I went 28 minutes and 51 seconds, but hey, who keeps track of time?
Wait, I want to throw out another theory. I don't actually agree with this, but have you guys heard the theory Cal from Silence in the Library is Clara Oswin?
I have heard that theory. It's... I don't think
God.
I don't think so either.
It is interesting, and if you think about it, there are a couple of dots that you can connect there, but that just seems... but, I mean, if you look at it, Silence in the Library is a Moffat episode. I mean, he wrote that episode, so it, you know, he loves going back to his own stuff.
Yeah.
It's possible.
Yeah. I'm going on record saying I don't agree with that, but I just wanted to bring it up.
Valid. Well, okay. We've got our refresher in. We've got our questions all dredged up again. We're just as confused and just as argumentative now as we were a couple months ago when we last stepped off this boat.
Yeah.
Ready to go at this again.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so, the point is that it's coming very soon, and we're going to know very soon.
Yeah, so next week we will have our refresher course on what's coming up on Series 7B. So you should have that just in time to sit down for Bells of St. John. You know, kind of get ready for all that, and then we will go into an episode-by-episode format again.
Mm-hmm. We should, at the rate that things are starting to get thrown at us right now, especially with just the maybe the next two or three episodes to come, we should have a little bit more insight into some confirmations on some rough script skeletons and things of that sort. So we'll be able to at least for the first half of the second half of the series, we'll be able to take a little bit more of an educated guess at what we're about to be thrown.
Right. Well, that about does it for this episode. You guys have anything in closing?
Please reach out to us. Please keep throwing theories and suppositions or tomatoes at us, whatever you got, because we find that we come up with some of our best arguing points when we're all taking different stances on these. And just like last week when I tried to irritate you guys with the whole 13th Doctor is the first Master thing, those are the kind of things that really let us start to play with a show that loves keeping us asking questions. So get out there on the various social media, contact us through all the different means that you've got, and you do have quite a few, and let us know what you think. We will get better during the course of the week at reminding you, putting the Facebook posts out there, asking the Twitter questions to get you guys to jump in, before the day of recordings and things, so that we can.
We will hound you until you talk to us.
And I will hound Melissa to put the tweets out there, since she's
I will hound you.
You can watch it happen live on Twitter. You'll watch my tweets to Melissa to get on the fracking forums. And yeah. What are those means of contact, Jay?
Well, you can find us on Twitter at Gallifrey Radio. Go to our new website at GallifreyPublicRadio.com. You can send us email at feedback@GallifreyPublicRadio.com. You can also find us on Facebook or on Stitcher Smart Radio. Leave us comments and reviews on iTunes. We absolutely love those. So there's plenty of ways for you guys to get us any kind of information. Send us your craziest and wildest theories, and we will systematically shoot them down and call you an idiot.
Yeah,
exactly. But I play the idiot. It's what I do. It's my job.
Yeah. All right. Well, this has been episode 30 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Until next week, this is Jay saying, "Sir, emergency. I think I've been run over by a cab."
This is Melissa saying, "Words."
And this is Kier saying, "I'm headed out to shovel the driveway again because, as I mentioned, it did snow again last night. Couldn't be bad, right?"
Of course not. Okay, we'll see you guys next week.
I'll see you later.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Join us each week for new episodes. We love getting feedback from listeners, so head over to iTunes and give us a 5-star review, send us an email at feedback@GallifreyPublicRadio.com, find us on Twitter at Gallifrey Radio, on Stitcher Smart Radio, or on our homepage at GallifreyPublicRadio.com. Music by Beyond the Epilogue and Retcon Addict.
Gallifrey Public Radio is copyright 2013.